All right, the last topic, rules and regulations. And we'll talk about the amateur radio service, authorized frequencies, licensing and classes, authorized transmissions, control operator, station ID, and third-party traffic. So, what do you need to remember? Number one is transmission of radio frequency energy within the United States and its possessions is left through the Telecommunications Act of 1934 to the FCC, an independent federal agency, five commissioners, three from the majority party, two from the minority party. The president appoints the chair. Mr. Carr is currently the chair of the FCC. So, the FCC defines amateur radio service among its purposes as being advancing skills in the technical communications phases of the radio art. Again, reminder, if it's bolded or italicized, it's a test question. Regulations for amateur radio service are in Part 87 of Title 47 of the Code of Federal Regulations. It's enforced by the FCC. Part 97 defines an amateur radio station as a station in an amateur radio service consisting of the apparatus necessary for carrying on radio communications. More definitions. Space station, that is an amateur station located more than 50 kilometers above the surface of the Earth. A beacon station, that's an amateur station transmitting communications for purposes of propagation study or related experimental activities. Volunteer frequency coordinator. This is a group of local amateurs recognized and respected by others in the community who recommend transmit receive channels and other parameters for auxiliary and repeater stations. Those will be defined in the next slide. And they're selected by amateur operators in a local or regional area. A repeater station is an amateur station that simultaneously retransmits the signal of another amateur station on a different channel. It extends the coverage of mobile and handheld devices. You know, you stick the repeater way up on a mountaintop or on a high antenna structure, maybe 1,000 feet in the air, and it receives on one frequency. It takes the audio from that and transmits it on another. Uplink, downlink, input, output. An auxiliary station is an amateur station that transmits signals over the air from a remote receive site to a repeater for retransmission. Now you've got a repeater system that lacks coverage in a particular area. So you stick an auxiliary station in that area and tie it back to the repeater system, oh, using an over-the-air link. That's what distinguishes it. It's an over-the-air link from the remote site. Harmful interference. Okay, we already just went through that in the last lecture. But the definition is any interference that seriously degrades, obstructs, or repeatedly interrupts a radio communication service operating in accordance with radio regulations. Harmful interference is never permitted. Intentionally causing harmful interference is grounds for revocation of license, fines, and imprisonment. Now, U.S. Attorney's Office for the appropriate district gets its teeth into it, and they don't let go. So you never want to get a notice of violation or a notice of proposed forfeiture. The International Telecommunications Union, ITU, is an agency of the United Nations. And all of the member states meet periodically in what's called the World Radio Conference to discuss radio frequency and treaty matters. So the United States implements ITU regulations and policies within the United States and its territories. The ITU has several regions, and we are in region two. It's all of North America. Here are some examples of authorized transmissions within various bands for technician licensees. In 80 meters, you're restricted to CW, 3.525 megahertz to 3.6 megahertz. On the 40-meter band, those are the frequencies. Again, you're limited to continuous wave, Morse code. The 15-meter band, it's 21 megahertz. Again, limited to continuous wave operation, Morse code. At 10 meters is the only high frequency band in which technicians have phone privileges, but they are power restricted. 200 watts peak envelope power maximum. Notice that the first 300 kilohertz of the 10 meter band is restricted to specific modes of operation, CW, RDI, radio teletype, data, and 200 watt power limitation. The next 200 kilohertz, you can use phone, still have a limitation of 200 watts. Above 50 megahertz, technician has all amateur privileges. So just like advanced licensees, extra class licensees, and general class licensees above 50 megahertz. This, you can see the link at the bottom of the slide. It's available from the ARRL. The American Radio Relay League is like the trade association representing the interest of America's amateurs before the FCC.
And
If you
you'll
study
receive
this,
this in your go-to kit. That will come to you in your go-to kit.
just going to say that. So the latest version should be in there. It can change from time to time, especially if action's taken by the ITU in Region 2. But you'll find this in your Get on the Air kit. And you can also get it directly from the ARRL by following that link. You have to memorize these. These are specific questions on the test. They're not technical in nature. It's just you've got to know this stuff. 52.525 is the calling frequency for 6 meter band. In the 2 meter band, 146.52 megahertz. 2 meters, 144 to 148. Okay. 6 meter bands, 50 to 54 megahertz. 443.350 is the 70 centimeter band authorized for use by technicians in ITU Region 2. 1296 megahertz or 1.296 gigahertz is a 23 centimeter frequency that techs can use. It's very, very popular for moon bounce or EME transmissions. That's Earth, Moon, Earth. The 1.25 meter band is what you're using when your station's transmitting on 223.50 megahertz. And technicians have, again, high frequency phone and RDI privileges on 10 meters only. Permitted operating powers for technicians, 200 watts on assigned portions of high frequency, 1500 watts above 30 megahertz. That's above the 10 meter band. You see that little helpful diagram in the upper right-hand corner? If you need it, it'll get you close, but it won't be exact. So for example, take 300 divided by megahertz times meters. That gives you a little calculation, but if you want to see where 2 meters comes up, it would be 150 megahertz. But that's not a valid amateur band. But it gets you close. So if it helps you, consider using it. Primary and secondary users. Many of the radio services authorized by the FCC have both primary and secondary users. The secondary users can't cause harmful interference to primary users and have to shut down immediately if they are causing interference. Those are the only two things. You either stop the interference or you stop operating. So in these bands, sometimes we're the primary users, like at 70 centimeters, or sometimes we're the secondary users, 23 centimeter band. You have to be aware of it, understand that there are questions on the test regarding this. The FCC also defines subbands for specific operating modes, right? You got a whole band, the 2 meter band, but it may be carved into different portions for repeaters, for RDI, for CW, data. So CW only is allowed in these mode-restricted subbands for techs. 50, it's the lower 100 kilohertz in the 6 meter and 2 meter bands, right? 50 to 50.1, 144 to 144.1. Mode-restricted subbands for technician are found on 6 meters, 2 meters, 1.25 meters. So some portion of each of these bands has a mode restriction. Don't operate right at the edge of the band or subband. Why? Well, your signal has bandwidth. So, unless you're absolutely certain that your unit is calibrated properly, that there's no error at all, your modulation sidebands won't exceed the limits of the subband or the band. Do not operate so close to the edge of the band that you could encroach on another band or subband in your operation simply because of bandwidth opportunities or because of high power modulation where you're modulating 100%. And that allows for calibration error, the transmitter frequency display, so the modulation subbands don't extend beyond the band edge and to allow for transmitter frequency drift. Not quite as much of a problem these days as it was back in vacuum tube days, where changes in temperature could cause frequency changes. But most of the stuff today is all solid state. And you seldom have these problems. But give yourself a margin of error and just stay inside the edges of the band. Licenses. Okay. The FCC no longer produces paper licenses. After testing, we get your certificate of satisfactory completion of exam from the volunteer examiners whose test you take. It'll be submitted to the FCC for batch processing. And if things go normally, usually in a couple of days, you have your license. But the only way that you're allowed to transmit is when your name and your license appear in the FCC's Universal Licensing System. So once it appears there, you are free to transmit. In the United States, amateur radio call signs consist of one or two letters, followed by a single number, and followed by one, two, or three letters. The first thing is that the very first letter in a call sign must be the designation for the country code. The United States has four: A, K, N, and W. That's Alpha, Kilo, November, and Whiskey. So every radio station licensed and authorized by the FCC must have a call sign that begins with one of those four letters. After that, could be 1x2, 2x1, 1x3, 2x2, 2x3, depending upon class license when your call sign was issued. So 1x2 is like, A2 BC. A 2x1 it would be AB 2C. Okay, yeah, I think you get the idea. Okay, my call sign's 2x3, but that's because I never desired to change it. I was kind of happy with the direct current voltage. So, I let it stay that way. But you're free to apply for a vanity call sign as long as it matches the allowed format for the license class you have. So, technician, general, and extra use different initial formats for their licenses. Special event call signs are typically 1x1. The example here, W8C, Whiskey 8 Charlie, is an example of a special event call sign. Like, you'd have one for the Boston Marathon or the New York Marathon or or tennis is now going on in Long Island. Clubs also can apply for a license. The criteria is they got to have at least four members, and club has to have a trustee. So some ham has to be willing to, act as trustee for the club. But for a while, for a number of years, the FCC was issuing club licenses that began with WC, KC, AC, or NC. And you probably noticed that beginning with an N, if you're a pilot, you'll notice that the aircraft tail numbers begin with the country code, either A, K, N, or W. In our case, it's almost always N. Contact logging. The FCC used to require hams to log every contact. When it started, frequency in use, station you talked to, duration of the call, when you signed off. Very valuable for hams if they want to document qualifications for various contests, like worked all states or worked all counties within a state. So even though it's not required any longer, you must keep your mailing address current. The FCC will come down very, very hard. Anyone who's a licensee does business with the commission and does not have an accurate mailing address. It's always good to have an email address that's accurate as well and keep it up to date. Otherwise, you face license suspension, maybe even revocation. But the FCC will definitely take enforcement action if correspondence is returned due to an incorrect address. And the FCC, as a courtesy, will send you a notice by both regular mail and email, but they're not required to send it by email. They are required to send it by regular mail. If you do get an official notice from the FCC, keep in mind you have 20 days within which to answer it. Hey, as you mentioned, you can begin to operate as soon as your name and call sign appear in the FCC's ULS database. If you do need to change anything at any time, like your mailing address or an email address, you go into the FCC's ULS database and you kick off an administrative update. No charge, perfectly free. When your license is issued, the FCC will send you a link to it. And then you can print out your official copy yourself. Don't need the FCC to send it to you. License term is good for 10 years. If your license expires, you have a 2-year window within which to renew your license, but because you're not licensed, you cannot operate. So no transmitting until renewal shows in ULS. Okay, operating outside the US. Well, if you're in a foreign nation and that nation allows American amateurs to operate within that country, that's fine. The US does not restrict operation by any of its own hams with other countries. There are other countries that restrict communications with American hams. Can't let that notion about freedom escape the confines of the United States. So it's allowed if the foreign country allows it. And some countries do have reciprocal agreements with the US, like Germany, where if you were there, you could operate as Delta Lima slash stroke slant W2AEW, if that were your call sign. So the DL is a German prefix, and then W2AEW would be your own call sign. Just check local restrictions. The AWRL does have information on operating outside the US and aboard vessels on its website. In international waters, if the vessel is documented or registered in the US, it's okay to use your amateur radio gear. It's just as if you were on US soil. Prohibited transmissions, foul, obscene, or indecent words or language. What are they? They're not listed, but you kind of know them when you hear them. Okay, no music unless it's incidental to an authorized retransmission of staffed space flight communications as to the space shuttle. and unpublished codes or ciphers to try to mask the meaning of communications. The only time those are allowed is if you're communicating or trying to control via radio, watercraft, or aircraft, drones. So what is allowed? We got to get to that. Meanwhile, no communications with any country whose administration has notified the ITU that it objects to such communications. Yeah, you might want to go and check before going to China or Russia or maybe North Korea or some other folks who aren't very friendly. But if they've notified the ITU that they object to those communications, you cannot talk to them. You also can't use your amateur radio equipment for a commercial reason or to make money or be compensated, except if you're operating incidental to a classroom instruction. You know, you're at that part of a physics course where you want to talk about radio frequency energy. You know, a demonstration of amateur radio by a person who's being paid to do that, right? The teaching function. Those folks in attendance to classroom instruction, it's okay. And occasionally notification about amateur radio equipment for sale, as long as it's not done as an everyday basis and it's amateur radio equipment. No broadcasting. Broadcasting is a transmission intended for reception by the general public. However, there are two exceptions. One is where such communication directly relates to the preservation of human life or property. And also when transmitting code practice, information bulletins, transmissions necessary for emergency communications. You'll hear that almost on a nightly basis from W1AW, the Maxim Memorial Station, operated and owned by the ARRL in Newington, Connecticut. So what can you,
Jeff, something happened to your camera. We can't see you.
Really?
Yes, we're just seeing your background. I think you might have tapped off your camera.
Nope, I didn't move it. Well, you know, we're almost near the end anyway. So,
well, we got a ways to go. Turn your camera off and then on again.
I can't, gotta get out of. Got to escape.
Ah, okay.
Hey, is it back?
Oops.
Here. Oh. How's that?
Yeah, but we were still not seeing you. We're only seeing the background. Ah, too bad. I don't know.
Sorry. That's okay. No.
Oh, maybe did you cover it with your little, the thing on your, you know, like covering it on the screen?
Nope.
Okay, well.
All right.
Something happened. All right, keep going. We will listen to you.
So what can you communicate? Well, communications that are incidental to the purposes of the amateur service and remarks of a personal nature. Next question. Brief transmissions for the purpose of making adjustments. You don't have to do that if you have an effective dummy load, right? But if you are testing, then you'd be testing, and say your call sign. You may receive a letter from the FCC or other agencies if you are reported for violations. Be sure to respond as instructed. You do have 20 days within which to respond. Okay. Control operator. An amateur radio station is never operated without a control operator. Who can be the control operator? Ordinarily, it's the station licensee. But it's only a person for whom an amateur radio operator primary station license grant appears in the FCC ULS, or who's authorized for alien reciprocal operation. By the way, only one primary license is allowed to be issued to any licensee. That is a test question. License class of the control operator determines the transmitting privileges. So, for example, a technician cannot be the control operator in the extra class portion of a band. Okay. Control operators, etc. More information. The control operator is required only for transmitting. So remember, the FCC regulates the transmission of radio frequency energy, not reception. Generally designated by the station licensee. And proper operation, equal responsibility is shared between the control operator and the station licensee. When using a repeater, the operator of the originating station is responsible for when using the repeater. The control point is the location at which the control operator function is performed. Okay. Control, local control, remote control, automatic control. They're pretty straightforward. Local control, so you pick up a handheld radio and transmit and receive. That's local control. You can't get any more local than that. Remote control is where the control operator is not at the station location, but can make adjustments to and regulate and control the operating adjustments of the station over some communications facility like the internet. A control operator is required and must be present at the remote control point because they indirectly manipulate the controls of the station, which is located elsewhere. Automatic control is a repeater. It's an example when the control operator is not present at a control point. It's the only type for which the control operator does not have to be at the control point. Station identification. Okay. Beginning and end of a transmission or contact every 10 minutes in between. Use English. You're an American licensed station. Operating on US territory, use English. Voice, phone, CW, Morse code, these are the way to go. You can either say your call sign or you can bang it out in Morse code. If it's a repeater, typically the repeater has an automatic ID that uses CW. Okay? That does not relieve you of the responsibility for identifying your own station. The phonetic alphabet is specifically encouraged by the FCC because it puts everybody on the same level playing field. The general rule is whenever you're engaged in those communications and you're an amateur from the US, you use the NATO military phonetic alphabet, Alpha, Bravo, Charlie, Delta, Echo, etc., all the way through Whiskey, X-ray, Yankee, and Zulu. There is an exception using station ID, and that's when transmitting signals to control model aircraft or watercraft. But even if you're using tactical calls like Boston Marathon, the logistics to so and so, you still have to ID with your real call sign every 10 minutes. Self-assigned identifiers. From this map, you can see where the FCC regions are. Those of us in New Jersey and New York are region two. It's kind of based upon population. So like California, big state, and Hawaii, you know, the K6s. I used to have this up in my ham shack when I was back in high school, and just put a pin wherever I had a contact. Got pretty busy after a while. But some of the examples are, let's say you're traveling in Pennsylvania, but you've got a two call sign. So I'd see WB2DCV, portable three. Or I could say that's like slash three. Or mobile. Or aeronautical mobile. Or QRP, very low power. Okay. And all of the following are correct. W2AEW, stroke W3, slant W3, slash W. You can add the call district if transmitting outside of your license district, but it can't conflict with other FCC identifiers or foreign country call sign prefixes. Like for us, it would be Canada and Mexico. Okay, third party traffic. Okay, That's a message is transmitted on behalf of or to someone other than an amateur radio licensee. So radiograms in the national traffic net, for example, using traffic handling, that's third-party traffic. You're passing along a radiogram. A lot of these are usually welfare checks after natural disasters or fire or forest fires. Perfectly legal in the US, but it may have restrictions for communicating outside of the US because in order to pass third-party traffic in the other country, it must have a third-party agreement with the US. And again, if you Google third-party agreements in the FCC, you'll find out with whom we do have third-party agreements. It's authorized by the FCC with any station whose government permits those communications. And finally, station records. The kind of station records that we used to have would be user manuals, logs about what adjustments you made to your equipment, any tests that were made, especially human exposure to radio frequency energy. But the key component here is the station records must be made available for inspection by the FCC representative at any time. And these records include all your RF emissions tests, equipment manuals, and specs. And that, my friends, concludes this lecture. And I think we got it done in a half hour, as requested.